Twisted.
This is Mark McNeese in New York City with my co-host,
Rick Rose in Shreveport, Louisiana.
And you're listening to The Twist. Welcome to another Twist podcast, everybody. This is one of our specials that we're doing now, my co-host Rick Rose and I, where we have on guests to inform you and engage you. And I'm in New York City, as it says in the introduction. Rick, are you in Shreveport this weekend?
I am, and we're in the midst of Mardi Gras. Last week we talked about King Cake, as you know, and our guest today is Mark King, who hails from Shreveport as well, originally. Mark, did you know that, Mark McGee?
I knew that there was a connection because you're also connected by the HIV advocates to watch for.
Yes, and of course our last special show featured Sagan Marsh, a songwriter here at the Shreveport Times, who is helping me in my mission here. So Mark King does a wonderful website for those that are tuning in for the first time and haven't heard us talk about Mark before, called My Fabulous Disease. He's a blogger. He does that. You can find him on Facebook or on his website. Contributes a lot to various publications and websites, and really active in the community in general. Good morning, Mark King, and thanks for joining us from Baltimore, Maryland.
Well, good morning, both of you, Mark and Rick, and thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I also know that you spent time lots of places, but Los Angeles. I was reading your bio, and you were involved with the Shanti Foundation at one point, and that brought back memories for me from 30 years ago when I lived in LA.
Really? Are you familiar with it?
Oh, yes. I lived in Los Angeles from 81 until 93, and that was the AIDS plague was in full force then, and you had the AIDS Project Los Angeles and Shanti Foundation.
You are absolutely right. And actually, we lived in Los Angeles at about the same time. I was there from 80 to 93. And Shanti was the first AIDS service organization actually to be founded in Los Angeles. And our mission was simply to provide emotional support to people who were dying. Because that was all we could do. I mean, this was before meds or anything. So it was a really, obviously an intense time.
Yes. Well, I'm very happy to have you on and to talk about all of this. So,
yeah, before we get into the meat of the matter, I looked at your post last night, Mark. I think it was on your personal Facebook page. And, oh, my God, you were working out next to Mr. O'Malley the other day, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Well, it turns out that Governor Martin O'Malley, he most recently of the Democratic primary, but dropped out after Iowa, he has to work out too. And God knows he does, if anyone's seen Googled pictures of him. And he was on the treadmill next to me at the gym here in Baltimore. And I was such a doofus. I just stared and I never said anything. And I should have said something and, something insincere, but something, I thought, should I get a selfie? And I'm like, no, just leave him alone, leave him alone. So I did not bother him. But let me tell you, the man's eyes are just as blue in person.
That's amazing. Did he seem a little down, or was he just right back at it?
No, he was just doing his thing. He had a big stack of papers he was reading, while he was working out. But apparently for my friends, I have just started going to this particular gym and it's nothing fancy, but, my friends there say, oh yeah, he's there all the time. He's not modest at all. So
that's awesome. Yeah. And Mark McNeese, I was going to ask you, Mark, if you were making the ride to Vermont to, feel the burn and get your free, Bernie Sanders tattoo. Did you know that was going on? There's a guy doing free tattoos, Mark McNeese, for either of you, if you want to drive up north.
Well, I am, at this point, I mean, O'Malley is not in the race anymore. I'm a Hillary person, and sort of by default, which I won't get into, but I can't see Hillary's name tattooed on my skin. O'Malley, what's interesting, with Bernie, what's so interesting, kind of interesting about him, is he's so popular with the young crowd. I mean, the young folks really love him.
It's amazing, and then they coin Phil Burn. Do you endorse Mark King on your website? Will you endorse a candidate, or do you think people care who you would go for?
It's not, no. I don't wade into political waters very often, unless it has to do with some law, you know, or policy that has to do with HIV. No. That being said, I'm Hillary all the way.
Oh, good.
Yeah, as am I.
It's just a matter of time, people. Everyone just needs to accept. It's just a matter of time. You may not get the nomination Tuesday, but she'll get it. She'll get it, and she will fight every inch for it, and she will be the nominee, and hopefully our next president.
Totally feel that way as well. It's quite amazing. When we were in the green room, folks, those that are listening in, Mark McNeese said, "That's Mark King." He said, "Hey, thank God, Mark, you watched the Charlie Sheen interview, which was recently on Dr. Oz." And I know, Mark, you wrote a whole blog about it. For those that hadn't watched the show, or for those that, it's so weird. The Charlie Sheen thing was hot when it first happened, and Inquirer broke the story. Then it went away. Now it's kind of back. Is it still relevant? Do you think the discussions that have come from his coming out, having HIV, is still relevant for us as people?
Well, whether we like it or not, it's relevant, because it's relevant by virtue of the fact that it's all over the television set. Mm-hmm. And so it's relevant by definition, because people won't stop talking about it. And the real shame here is that it started out so well. When he initially made his announcement on the Today Show with Matt Lauer, it was, I thought, a solid interview. There was a little Tiger Blood Charlie showing through here and there, his arrogance about, well, HIV has messed with the wrong guy, as if there is a right guy, right? But he did a great job in delivering some key messages about what it means to be HIV positive today, particularly having an undetectable viral load and posing no threat to anyone else when you are on successful treatment and your viral load is undetectable. That was, suddenly... I was doing interviews all over the news as fallout from that, talking about what it means to be undetectable. And I, I'll tell you what, 2 days earlier, never would I have imagined that would suddenly become a phrase that millions of people were becoming familiar with, and what it means. So I thought he did a tremendous public service for us in that initial interview, and I just had to cross my fingers that he would hold it together and not go off the rails, which he did very shortly thereafter when he stops his medications and, on his quest for a cure, finds himself in Mexico while some quack, performs some sort of mysterious treatment that has still not been explained. And Charlie claimed that his viral load was undetectable during that time. Well, if he had only recently stopped his medications, his viral load could still be undetectable anyway, because the medications were still doing their job. I don't know, but very soon thereafter, his viral load spiked again, and he has gone back on his medications. And this whole sordid ordeal was played out on the Dr. Oz show, which makes perfect sense when you think about it in terms of, the reputation of Dr. Oz and, what a great arbiter of, scientific research the man is. So, it's been up and down. He had a great start. Then he went off the rails with this doctor thing. And unfortunately, as recently as last week, Bill Maher in politically, his series on HBO, Bill Maher actually sat down with the doctor who had reportedly cured Charlie Sheen of his HIV, which he clearly had not. This guy claims to have cured people with cancer, with HIV. He mentioned he did it with goat's milk. It is insane. And yet Bill Maher sat there with a straight face and interviewed the guy, because Bill Maher has kind of a little paranoia streak. He likes government conspiracies. He likes thinking that maybe there's a cure and it's being withheld from us. Believe it or not, a guy that's who is otherwise, a funny comic and social critic, actually believes that perhaps they're withholding a cure. for HIV. And so he interviews Charlie's quack doctor, you know, with a straight face. And so that was a great public disservice, because in all of this new news about Charlie Sheen seeking a cure, there's no reporting going on about the actual cure research that's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, there are clinical trials going on right now for vaccines, for cure treatments for people with HIV that are legitimate. And rather than have any of those people on any of those shows, they're focusing on Charlie's pathetic little, you know, effort to go find, you know, some shortcut, you know. And it's been very, very troubling to treatment activists, to HIV advocates of all kinds.
Well, something about the whole Charlie Sheen media circus that bothered me was the slut shaming, and then the it just kind of I just saw a lot of, I thought a lot of people were back to HIV is the wages of sin mentality. You know, because he had the lifestyle that he had and the choices that he made. It's, oh, okay, Charlie Sheen got HIV, and this is, you know, this is what happens when you live this way. And I just, I detected an element of that out there, and I thought that was pretty unfortunate.
I agree. I thought that not only was there an element of, oh, well, Charlie Sheen, he had it coming, but not only was it that sort of shame thrown in his direction, he was throwing it in other people's direction.
Yeah.
Particularly in his Today Show interview, where he's like, well, you know, he essentially was saying, well, all these slutty girls I've been hanging out with, you know, they're all squeezing me for money, and so I'm being forced to do this. You know, made them look like, you know, in other words, apparently when it comes to HIV, there's plenty of shame for everyone. You know, we'll just pile it on, you know, one to another.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the other posts you had recently, Mark, going back to O'Malley's Blue Eyes, you did a piece about a priest who was real active in the HIV and AIDS community in the early days, who had piercing blue eyes, and his pictures were amazing. You know, you can look into someone's eyes and see their past and future. And I want to tie it in with, again, I'm verbalizing my gratitude to you for naming me one of the 16 advocates to watch in 2016. And a lot of that has to do with common friends I have, Leanne Cornett, who's also been a friend on our show, a former Miss America, who still fights the fight. That being said, what I really loved about talking about him is, and really what I loved about your selection of 2016 advocates, is there are so many future forwards. The disease has changed. The way we're approaching the disease has changed. But when you get back to its core, it really is about compassion and understanding and about that human contact. Not to get too emotional, because all three of us on this phone have lost so many friends over the years, and many listening, of course, have. Tell us briefly about that blog and why people should check it out, because this man was really, really poignant to you, too, and made you think about things a little differently, too, didn't he?
He certainly did. You know, you're mentioning two things, and I gotta first mention this list you're talking about, the advocates to watch list, which I guess I'm putting out every year, and I kind of feel like if you're an old queen, you'll remember Mr. Blackwell, you know, would come out with his worst dressed list every year, and he became kind of a thing. So I think my thing will be I'll come out with the Advocates to Watch list, which is, of course, more of an honor than being on Mr. Blackwell's worst dressed list. But nevertheless, I'm enjoying it, and I'm enjoying highlighting people who might not otherwise be getting that sort of recognition. And it's and this year there are two things I tried to accomplish with that list. I wanted to go worldwide. I wanted to make sure I was really concentrating on people outside the United States who are working in places and advocating in societies and in political atmospheres in which they are under threat of their own livelihood and their own liberty. By the nature of the work they're doing, you know, someone in Africa who was literally on trial for being a homosexual because he was giving safer sex education to to people, including gay men. You know, a man in the Ukraine who was under constant threat of prosecution because he was trying to get HIV education and testing in his. So, you know, the stakes are very high when you look around the world. And of course, Rick, I was thrilled to not only include you. It was only secondary that I realized that you actually lived in my hometown of Shreveport, so that made it kind of special. But it certainly didn't ever figure into the initial thing. I was just happy to highlight your work. So anyway, that list is something I'm going to look forward to doing every year. And it was so nice that the Shreveport Times there in Shreveport did a story about your being on the list, because I got this very excited phone call from my mother. She's like, awesome. Mark, I'm opening the paper, I'm minding my own business, and there is your name.
I love newspaper. I love so the newspaper. It still resonates, yeah.
it was great. So anyway, the blog post you're mentioning is a profile I did of Tom Bondarenko, and he runs a food bank, you know, a food delivery service that initially started for people with HIV, and now they do it for people with all life-threatening illnesses. And last month, they had me come in and talk to their staff meeting and just tell my story and talk about early AIDS and stuff, because a lot of these staff members are really young. And Tom made a passing reference during his comments about my remarks by saying that he had once been a priest and did funerals for the only funeral home in Baltimore at the time who would conduct funerals for people lost to AIDS. And he got kind of emotional when he mentioned it. He said, "I would often be standing at the gravesite alone, conducting the service out loud to no one." And that image was so striking to me, and I knew I had to write about it. And so I went back to his office a few weeks later and sat down and had him tell me the story of how this came to be and what it was like to minister, literally, to this was as a result of the fact that he was working at a homeless shelter. And, you know, he in the 80s, and slowly men started appearing in the homeless shelter who had drug issues and all sorts of things that were living with AIDS, that were covered in lesions, that were clearly very sick, and who had no family, and who started to ask Tom, because he was a priest, "Would you conduct my funeral service?" And Tom would often try to locate family of any kind, and either he couldn't or they wouldn't show up. And he talked to me about what it was like to conduct the funeral service to the grass and the trees and the lonely graveyard with no one there, but how he did it out loud because he felt like that was what was proper and he wanted to do it respectfully. And it was just a heartbreaking story, and he had a very difficult time talking about it without crying, you know, mm-hmm. just filled with tears several times during that conversation. But it was such a lovely snapshot of what we all did in our own ways during that time, and just a lovely bit of grace and that he demonstrated. And we don't want to forget that. We want to keep those stories alive and let people know, what lengths, what courage, you know, what personal fortitude so many of us displayed.
Well, I think that's it's very moving. I'm sitting here being very emotional because it seems like, and I could be wrong, I'm definitely not somebody who lives in the past. I'm 57 and I'm very much alive and, you know, try to be vibrant and all of those things. But it just seems like what we as a generation went through is fading in relevance to younger people. They've got cocktails, they've got prep, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It does need to be not only kept alive, but the absolute power of it remembered, because
yes.
It's not, you know, it's, I sometimes feel it's not, you know, it's like, and I don't want to be tangential, but being a gay man is sort of becoming, in some quarters, I just feel marginalized. I feel like I'm just like this old gay man and who doesn't matter anymore. And I don't know why, where I'm getting that, those feelings, but when I read things, you know, the queer kids and all of this stuff, it's like, oh, you're just, you know, you're just a gay man and blah, 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 blah. So I hope that there, you know, some of the generation that's, you know, that's current and future generations will remember that this was profound. I mean, this was a profound thing to experience.
I think, Mark, what touched me this week in the news was the AIDS Quilt going digital. That story this week really moved me, because as we all know, the three of us talking, those listening and that can relate to the last 5 or 10 minute conversation here, the quilt really symbolized and represented so much of what was going on. And just sewing it and touching it and feeling it. And I know when Charles died, my partner, grabbing his ties, his Hermes ties, or now I'm getting emotional, but the smell of the tie when he was working at Christian Dior and blah, 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 and putting that together. And I just, it's so reflective that the last display, of course, Mark McNeese, you and I were there to see when they unfurled it.
In Washington, yeah.
In Washington, or Lianza and I, when we were reading names, you know, and now it's gone digital. So we say, you know, like Mark King, you were referring to the Street Boy Times, and now my whole mission working at the Times is really to take things digital. But I think that will have some resonance, Mark. I really hope that the quilt coming back and going digital and kind of promoting that story, people can look up, you know, histories and stuff. I do hope it has some resonance. On the other hand, when you have someone like Sagan Marsh working at the paper, who's a young 22-year-old from Indiana, who's really, now she's doing Mark King, you should know she's working with Chip over at the Philadelphia Center to do a story about PrEP, and the husband and wife here locally who are on PrEP. Those are the conversations that need to happen. So I think Mark McNeese, you know, we live in the one world, but on the other hand, we have to really promote and support and love that other world that's, you know, going forward. That's my thoughts on it. Mark King, any ideas you have?
Well, I'm of two minds. I absolutely agree with Mark that this is precious history to be preserved. What it is, you know, I'm 55 years old. What I experienced in the 20s, during the 1980s, was profound and certainly the greatest health crisis of the century. And it was also an opportunity to see the very best of people, as tragic as it was. So, you know, people are going to be writing about it and creating art about AIDS and particularly its impact in the 1980s for the rest of time. It's going to be a marker for the rest of time. What happened? How did people respond, both good and bad? It's going to be something that we're mulling over for a long time, and that is the way it should be. That being said, I also have to cede history to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to remember that this is a very human condition, that as a generation ages, we step aside. We are not as relevant. We are no longer in the spotlight in the way that we were. Our time in the spotlight was filled with great tragedy, and it probably has more resonance than most generations' time in the spotlight. But I have to remember that I will often say, you know, in my youth, I did not walk up to Vietnam vets and say, tell me all about it.
Mm-hmm.
Please, let's sit down. I want to hear all about your experience. I didn't do that. I was self-absorbed. You know, I was self-centered. I was in my own youth. I was having my own experience. And and now that's what this younger generation is doing. I certainly believe that they are informed mm-hmm. by what has happened to us, but they have to make their own way. You know, I do my best to provide opportunities for them to hear about our history, but I also have to have the humility to understand that they are having their own experience. They are having their own prime, you know, of life, youth. And and they'll have to make their own mistakes. And the best I can do is provide as much mentorship and guidance and reflection on my own history as I can. But that only goes so far. Because again, they're too busy living their life to want to, you know, hear too much about what happened to me 30 years ago.
That's very interesting. I want to bring up two things. And one of those two movies that recently I saw here in Shreveport, and of course they're playing in Baltimore, they're playing in New York, they're playing all over. One is on Anomalisa, which is a puppet movie done by Charlie Kaufman, who did adaptation and some very powerful movies. And it's really just about that. You know, life goes on. It's just about a guy that's a speaker at a conference and falls for a woman that's got her own uniqueness, although she views herself as very bland. And then last night I saw a movie, Youth, with Michael Caine. And it's a very beautiful, imagery-rich movie. And it's about an old conductor and an old film writer. And Jane Fonda, of course, plays an old actress. And it's a beautiful movie, gentlemen. Have either of you seen it yet?
No.
I've seen both.
Oh, wow.
Because I am a movie queen, so I see everything, and you're right. They're both brilliant in their own way, especially Anomalisa.
Yeah, and they resonate the conversation we're having here. And our experience, you know, it is what we were given, centers around the plague and all of that. That's what defined us. But everybody, my mom's experience, and she's a 74-year-old woman, is very different, and I'm sure she feels the same way about her story. You know, it's very interesting. And then secondly, I want to bring this back as we wrap this up. My work with the AIDS Master, one of the things we used to always do is focus back on the time before AIDS and HIV. And we really looked at, hey, remember when, you know, things were different. And I want to just kind of focus on that, Mark, and then we'll wrap it up. And the reason I bring it up is because Mark McNeese promised we'd talk about this. You and I also share a history because we were both contestants on a game show. And I want to reflect on that. I mean, you were on The Price is Right when you were a young 20-some-year-old kid.
I was 19, thank you very much.
Oh, my gosh. And I saw the clip because you were kind enough to share it with me. Boy, such energy you brought to that stage.
Did you come on down?
I did. I went on down, and I won a car.
Wow.
Oh, yes, it was great. Yes. It was just great to see, you know, you in that space. And so is that a memory of a lifetime for you as well?
Well, it is, and I think it is especially. I actually talk about that experience in the prologue of my book, A Place Like This, which chronicles my time in Los Angeles, because it was my introduction to Los Angeles. Going out there and getting on this game show, and because it is on tape, because it's on YouTube, and I can look at it again, and it brings back to me a life filled with possibilities. This young, fresh face, where his whole life was ahead of him, and nothing bad had happened yet. And I had a boyfriend, and life was good, and I was moving to Los Angeles, and all of this stuff, you know, was ahead of me, with no clue of. You know, the darkness that was about to descend on all of us there, especially in Los Angeles. And so it is absolutely a milestone for me for some bittersweet reasons. You know, I look at that face and it is untouched, as yet untouched, by what was going to be a profound tragedy that would haunt me the rest of my life. So yes, it's interesting to watch.
And my experience was the same. I remember when I was on stage at Class of Concentration, and I was there with, you know, I still have that video, or my niece and nephew do, and they swear to pull it out every time I bring friends home to Wisconsin. But Charles was on stage with me, you know, and then, you know, he had HIV at the time, but the other issues all happened after that. So, yeah, it's quite the thing. So, Mark, tell people how they can follow you or find you and where you would like to direct them if they haven't read your work before.
Oh, sure. Well, people are welcome to come visit me on my blog. It's myfabulousdisease.com. And, you know, from there, I'm on Twitter, @myfabdisease. But my website is really kind of my home base for most of my writings and videos, and they are welcome to come by.
Well, Mark, it's been a delight to have you on and talk to you. You're in Baltimore. I like Baltimore. We have friends there. Been there quite a few times. And to just get your take on all these things, it's been really nice.
You're so welcome. I appreciate the invitation very much. Thanks to both of you.
Absolutely. And I want to mention that we have our next guest. We're currently doing these once a month. Because we normally it's Rick and I and our craziness on the weekends. But once a month we have a guest. And our next guest is Beverly Pomeranz. And she's coming up there in March. I also want to say thank you to the Pride 48 podcasting community. The Twist is now on their roster. So you can find us at thetwistpodcast.com. You can check us out on iTunes, Libsyn, Stitcher, and now Pride 48. So,
yes.
Rick, I know you're going to, you've got, I call them in quotes. I always thought that was kind of, clever.
Like
I don't try to be clever, but I like it. I mean, I like it.
I like it too. And I'm grateful for the podcast getting out there in other ways. And Beth Pomeranz, it's a unique theme because Peg and Mark was our first special guest, and Mark King, and thank you again, Mark, for joining us. And then Beth Pomeranz was actually the one that cast me on Class of Concentration. So there's like this continuing thread, Mark and Mark, that's kind of like our guests are all kind of twisted and connected in some ways. But yes, here's our end quote for the day. The movie on Mona Lisa actually led me to this quote only because I was digging into the meaning of that movie. And this is from child development psychologist L.R. Knopf is his name, and it is this quote. Life is amazing, and then it's awful, and then it's amazing again. And in between the amazing and the awful, it's ordinary and mundane and routine. Breathe in the amazing, hold on through the awful, and relax and exhale during the ordinary. That's just living, heartbreaking, soul-healing, amazing, awful, ordinary life. And it's breathtakingly beautiful. That's our end quote.
End quote. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, for everybody, the listeners, for tuning into the Twist, America's only clothing optional podcast.